This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. More analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, the Blue Jays season is over, but Baseball Central at noon is still around for another week until we hand it off to the hockey guys for Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, if you're listening and viewing pleasure. As always, we are brought to you by Home Hardware.
It's not Happy Monday anymore, is it?
I already miss the...
Me too.
I already miss the baseball season. I mean, the playoffs are on, but, you know,
Can you imagine if the Jays were in the playoffs? Wow.
It'd be a little exciting.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
You know what? How disappointing would it be? I was thinking about this. If you're a team like Kansas City, and you've had a long playoff drought, and you get into the wild card,
right,
and you lose the wild card game, would it feel like you actually made the playoffs? I was thinking about this the other day. If the Jays, something miraculous had happened, and the Jays had gone on to get the wild card spot and advance to the wild card playoffs, and then let's say they lose to, let's say they lose to Oakland, 4-1 in that wild card game. They're out. Would that even feel like you were in the playoffs?
Why wouldn't it? That's my question. Why it's the playoffs.
What if it was a road game? You know what I'm saying? Like
The Jays had to go to Oakland and play in Oakland, and then they got beat.
Yeah, it's like
7-1 or
you know, would we be saying, well, at least they made the playoffs?
Why wouldn't you? My question would be, would you expect them to win the World Series this year?
No.
Oh, you would rather them be in the playoffs?
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, my point is, beggars can't be choosers. You wanted meaningful,
that's true,
meaningful baseball in September. Guess what you had?
And I suppose. I just
it's the playoffs. You're excited to be in the playoffs. It's, you know, that's what everybody plays for. That's what all the teams play for. And there's only a handful of people that make the playoffs, whether it's that game or, you know.
The Jays won't be in the playoffs. Again, that's they now have the longest current postseason drought of any team in baseball.
Yeah.
Shai Davidi was, a bunch of us went out for drinks last night, and the toast was playoff free since 93.
You guys are just
We're going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin. Alex Anthopoulos had his say yesterday. John Gibbons had his say yesterday. I'm going to ask you three things you would do right out of the gate. Three things you would do right out of the gate that you think would make this team a playoff contender next year?
Well, the first thing I would do is find a closer. And I think we've talked about this, me and you. There's already a closer in house here in Aaron Sanchez. I'm just going on by what I've seen, the way he's pitched out of the bullpen. You can't argue that. He's arguably one of the best guys out of the bullpen in the American League. I mean, you can argue that any way you want. There's not a whole lot of guys that throw 99 with some sink and get guys out with one pitch. That's the first way I would go. Now, if that's going to happen, probably not. But it's hard to state the obvious. And the problem the Jays have had this year is scoring with guys, scoring runs with guys other than hitting a home run. And when they do it, having trouble holding the lead late in the game because of the bullpen. Well, you can't go out and find a guy that has stuff like that and has done it already. That would be the first thing I would do. The second thing I would do is I would work on how you're going to have an everyday shortstop, because the shortstop position is like nobody else on the field. You can talk about left field. You can talk about center field. Sounds to me like Alex has a center fielder. And Dalton Pompey, you can say that. What I took from that press conference yesterday sounds to me like he's going in that direction. And you know, you can't argue he hits both sides of the plate. And we talked about this when he was getting called up from A-ball to double-A on He knows his swing. He knows what's a strike and what's a ball. That's the first thing you have to worry about. And it sounds like, and by what you're seeing, you can see that with a guy that's a little bit more experienced than saying Anthony Ghost. I think that Anthony Ghost thing, I don't know what you've seen, Jeff, but looks to me like that may have sailed and passed.
And well, yeah, I don't.
Maybe Kevin Pillar is your fourth outfielder. That would be, because the only reason I say that is between the three, Kevin Pillar and Dalton Pompey both hit fastballs. Anthony Ghost doesn't. That's the he now, not saying he can't learn how to hit a fastball, but right now, moving forward, next year, you know, those two guys that I mentioned, Kevin Pillar, Dalton Pompey, can hit a fastball.
Yeah, I think Alex was pretty open. He didn't close the door on Dalton Pompey coming into spring training, but I think he made it clear that there are other things he wants to look at. In other words, having Dalton Pompey come into spring training with a legitimate shot at winning a job, that's not plan A. Plan A is Alex knows he has to add two bats. Now, you might be able to address one of those situations from within. Personally, I don't see Anthony Ghost as an everyday player. He's a tremendous defender. I get that. But unless Alex goes out and adds a third baseman with a lot of offensive potential, moves Brett Laurie to second, adds another outfielder with a lot of offensive potential, that's the only way I see them carrying Anthony Ghost's bat. He's a tremendous defender.
Yes.
He could play center field for me any day, but I just,
he has to hit.
Well, and it's not like this guy's had one chance or two chances or three chances. He basically had four chances. And at some point you keep asking yourself, why isn't the light bulb going on? Mm-hmm. Now, there's some people out there who will say that for whatever reason, they think that part of the issue with Anthony Ghost is he's got a little bit of Colby Rasmus in him. He doesn't pay attention to his hitting coach. He's stubborn. He's got his own ideas about things. And you'll hear people within the organization say that.
It's not working.
But all that aside, to me, it's pretty clear. You have to add two bats to this lineup next year. I'll go with you can put Pillar in left field as far as I'm concerned, but there's no way I can start the year with Pillar, Ghost, or Pompey and Jose Bautista in right field. I just can't. I need an established everyday major league outfielder, and I need an established everyday major league infielder, either at second or third. I don't pretend to know whether or not Alex can get those commodities, but he absolutely has to get one of them. He absolutely has to get one of them. They cannot, you know, people talk about, well, can they come back next year with sort of the same team? They cannot come back with the same lineup.
Because the American League East is going to be really good next year.
Yeah, even just that, I would say that, you know what, even if this team had gone to the wild card spot, I would say that they couldn't come back with the same lineup. I mean, we talked about this when they were going well in May. And I understand you never have the perfect lineup. There isn't a team in baseball that 1 through 9 is totally happy with the players they have. They're just that team doesn't exist. Somebody's always looking to get better. Somebody always thinks they can reinvent the wheel. Nobody's ever 100% happy with their team. But even in May, we were talking about how we saw some issues with that lineup. And Alex at some point was going to have to dress the infield regardless of how the season turned up.
Sounds like there's a lot of questions. There's a big if there
and also the bullpen. And you know, Alex is too trained. Sort of his train of thought here is, I will either go out and add through trade or free agency a guy with a track record as a setup guy who our scouts think might be able to close. David Robertson was a guy, an example thrown out. Although I will say David Robertson was groomed to be the Yankees closer for about 2 years. They just didn't stumble on him. He was a Yankees guy. They've been grooming him for a couple of years to replace Mariano Rivera. He was the guy, in point of fact, that Mariano Rivera identified for the Yankees, asked him a couple of years ago. Watch these guys in spring training. Is there somebody you see that might be able to come in? And he said, I like the looks of David Robertson. So that's different than going out and adding a guy from another organization and bringing in and think he can close. But that's one of the things Alex is looking at. So Shai Davidi and I and Mike Wilner were talking. Maybe you're looking at Jason Mott, somebody along that line as a guy who could come in as a setup guy. Wilner threw out the name Mike Adams. A guy could come in with a track record as a setup guy that you think you can close. Or as Alex just said, maybe you go with quantity over quality. Bring in a bunch of guys in spring training and say, all right, sort it out.
Well,
and if you do that, I'll tell you what, if you do that, the first time you get two or three bad outings in the Grapefruit League, you know what we're going to be writing.
Aaron Sanchez.
When do you move Aaron Sanchez into the bullpen?
My question is, why would you do all these things? It's already here. And then you want to start within your organization, like, say, a Tampa Bay, and maybe Dalton Pompey could be your fifth starter, just saying that, because he does have four legitimate pitches.
Dalton Pompey or Daniel Norris.
Daniel Norris could be your fifth starter. That's what I'm saying. And then you have Aaron Sanchez in the back end of your bullpen. It just makes sense out the gate. And then if things start to not work out, then you can go outside and get other things. But to me, the Jays have more problems than that spot. They have to outscore people. Bottom line is the American League East. You have to outscore people. That's because the Red Sox are going to be a lot better. The Yankees are going to go out and spend money. They're going to make themselves better. They can't afford to go two bad years in a row. Tampa Bay's a one good hitter away from being your pick again. The only question may be Baltimore, just because they're a home run hitting team and home run hitters are streaky.
John Gibbons made the point yesterday that the Jays pitching staff is the type of pitching staff you have to score a lot of runs for.
They're not swing and miss guys.
No, and that's because I think we thought going into the year we all said the same thing. I think you put 10 baseball people in 10 people who knew anything about the Blue Jays in one room and said, all right, what will be the strength of this team? The first thing we would have said is lineup. Second thing we would have said is bullpen. And then we would have said, but the big, big, big issue is the starting rotation. Well, Alex Anthopoulos said yesterday, you know, he felt the same way, that the lineup and the bullpen would be the biggest strengths. He seemed to think that the bullpen was the biggest source of a letdown this year, but there was a time when this team started to fall apart that it just couldn't score any runs. And you and Joe Siddle and everybody's talked about one other issue is if this team wasn't scoring by hitting home runs, it wasn't scoring.
That's right. How do you do it? Who hits in front of Batista and Edwin? Who does that?
Well, that's another big deal.
I'm saying, when we talk about the back end of a bullpen and who may be your fifth starter if the other things don't work out, the two older guys get traded, one of the two, it's meaning Mark Burley or R.A. Dickey, which one of those stay, which one goes. It's in-house. If you want to start in-house, and then the main thing is you have to outscore people, and it's already here, and you know you've called these guys up in a hurry to see them, to see if they can do it. And I think questions have been answered.
See,
I
think that what Alex has got in Alex's perfect world, well, in his perfect world, Melky resigns. That isn't going to happen.
Exactly.
Where I think Aaron Sanchez coming in as a closer has a real chance of happening is if you don't trade one of R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley. And, I mean, you can list reasons. There are reasons to keep both of them. There are reasons to trade both of them. There are reasons one of the reasons you might want to trade R.A. Dickey is because you're probably going to get more in return for him because he's got 2 years left in this contract, $12 million a year, dirt cheap by Major League standards. Mark Burley has 1 year left. It's $19 million. Not dirt cheap by Major League standards. So in terms of value in return, you're probably going to get more in return for Dickey than you would for Burley. But if you're the Jays, you'd probably rather have, for on-field performance, you'd probably rather have Dickey than Burley. That's outweighed by the fact, Kevin, this become pretty clear in the past month to month and a half, that people around the Jays have really taken note of how good Mark Burley has been with the young guys, particularly with Stroman and Hutchison. Just how important he has been to their development as a pitcher. And if you operate under the assumption that next year Daniel Norris and Aaron Sanchez are going to be here in some capacity, well, I'll throw this out there. Who would you rather have them following? R.A. Dickey or Mark Burley? Who is going to be, who would be better placed to be the leader, the guy who is going to talk to Drew Hutchison about what you need to do in this situation?
Well, I would say Mark Burley, just by the fact of R.A. Dickey, is it's hard to relate to him because he throws a knuckleball. How is he going to say?
He talks a knuckleball too.
Exactly. So it's like, how do you, and it gets back to your point again, with all of these things being said with the question marks, and Josh Toley has to be a one guy catcher, meaning he's going to catch one guy, and he really off the bench can't, let's face it, can't do a whole lot with the bat. It adds to another, you know, then you don't have that guy that can come off the bench and pinch hit for somebody late in the game. It's just not a comfortable situation. So how do you go there? There's a lot of questions. And I'm just saying, I know everybody wants Aaron Sanchez to start, and it would be great to go out and see this guy go 160 innings and do whatever, but it gets down to what do you need the most at the beginning of a year, and when you can plug in. There's a reason why they brought Daniel Norris up here, to see him pitch, and obviously we saw that he has a tough time out of the bullpen, which is okay. Now you start him, and you gave him that one start. He's got good stuff. He throws 95 left-handed, and if you sign Jay Happ back, you have two left-handers that throw in the mid-90s to upper 90s with good off-speed pitches that most teams in the American League East don't have those. That's, you can say what you want, and then if you add R.A. Dickey to the mix with a guy throwing in the 80s with a ball moving all over the place or in the low to mid-70s, and then you're adding Stroman to the mix with some attitude, and, man, it just – to me, it makes sense. Now, whether that's going to happen or not, and it erases them having to go out and find a closer. That's my point.
Well, and you know, and I'll echo that. When you're looking for four things, which is essentially what the Blue Jays are looking for, if you've got one in-house, you should probably...
Well, you have two in-house, actually. You have a starting pitcher, a young guy that you could, you know, make into what you want him to be.
Right, but I'm saying right now, if the rotation came, if everything came... If the season was continuing today and everything is
with the two old guys still here,
yeah, you would continue with Sanchez as a closer. Let me just do a reset, by the way. The Blue Jays finished 83-79. They lost 1-0 to the Orioles on Sunday. R.A. Dickey took the loss. He finishes the year 14-13 with an ERA of 3.71. A couple things to look at. The Jays have team options on four players. Jay Happ, $6.7 million. Adam Lind, $7.5 million. Dustin McGowan, $4 million. Brandon Morrow, $10 million. The Jays' unrestricted free agents are Melky Cabrera, Casey Jansen, Colby Rasmus. Kevin, I think we can say we don't expect to see any of those three back. We'd like to see Melky back. I think we're all pretty skeptical that's going to happen. Yeah. But I want to talk about the team options. Jay Happ at $6.7 million, you've got to pick that up. Jay Happ has
earned the right to be back.
He absolutely has earned the right to be back. And as a matter of fact, Alex Anthopoulos said yesterday that he thinks that Jay Happ can be even better. They think there are a few things they can do with Jay Happ to make him even better.
I think his changeup has taken him to a different level.
It absolutely has. So. And it's increased the effectiveness of his fastball, which... Again, we make this, maybe we don't talk about this enough, but honest to God, it's like overnight, Jay Happ found 3 miles an hour in his fastball.
Right. And it looks harder because of his off-speed pitches.
Exactly.
And he's throwing strikes. Yes. I think we forget about
he's
things.
Attacking,
that,
he's attacking the
it's
strikes.
It's the obvious.
Yeah.
You throw strikes, you're a better pitcher. It's obvious.
Adam Lind's option is at $7.5 million. Now, this is interesting. Adam Lind is a platoon player, a left-handed bat against right-handed pitching. Power numbers aren't that good. there's a sense that Adam Lind isn't extremely happy here being on this team.
He's not playing every day.
Yeah, and there's, I wonder, you know, we talk about whether or not you get to a point with players where you have to turn the page and it's time to move on. We talked about that with Colby Rasmus. We talked about it with Aaron Hill before that. It's almost like the two sides grow apart. I'm beginning to wonder if that's the case with Adam Lind. Having said that, you've got to pick up that $7.5 million option.
It sounds like a no-brainer, but it gets back. We've talked about this a lot. You have to have a set team, meaning that Adam Lind, you can't platoon all of these positions and expect to win. It has to. He's either going to be your DH or your first baseman, mm-hmm. and that's the guy I go with every day. You have it here until you show me you can't do it anymore, and until they have an actual team on the field 7 days a week, it's going to be real tough for them to win. That's I'm saying it's a no-brainer, and you pick him up just because he rakes and he's a good big league hitter, and he knows exactly what he should do and shouldn't do on an everyday basis. But until you play your everyday team every day, man, it's going to be tough. You can't ask a guy that plays three times a week to go out and get four hits a day. You can't expect him to do that.
It's Baseball Central at Noon, brought to you by Home Hardware. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, the two pitchers we were talking about, two other pitchers, Dustin McGowan at $4 million a year. I'm not certain they picked that up.
I don't think so either.
There's not a lot of... Let's just say this. The manager doesn't... Well, I'll just come out and say it. Huh? The manager's got very little faith in Dustin McGowan.
I don't think he throws enough strikes.
Yeah, I think, frankly, the manager's tired of Dustin McGowan. I just think he is. He doesn't... You're right. He doesn't throw enough strikes.
I think that's it. I think when you don't throw strikes out of the pen...
Yeah, no, you'd like to think that you might be able to get something for that arm, mind you, but... and you know, you're already looking at a bunch of issues in the bullpen that that would be the thing that would weigh against it. But I can tell you that it's a discussion that the Jays have had, and it's a discussion they will have. And Brandon Morrow at $10 million. Morrow intrigues me, but not at $10
million. I don't see that intrigued either. I think the first couple of times he came back from the DL and he was throwing 98 to 99, 97, I'm saying, yeah, you get on board, you do it. But then the last time I saw him pitch at 94,
and they put and he went out for the second. They used him multiple innings, and he was a mess.
Exactly right. I just don't see it happening. I think it gets back to the Aaron Sanchez thing. Mm-hmm. I think when you're seeing guys that have tried to do this, meaning go from bullpen to starter back to bullpen, and it's just a different mindset. That's why I say when you have things in house, sometimes you don't mess with things that are working.
Mm-hmm.
And but the $10 million, I just don't see it happening. I don't think it's going to happen. And
also, out of Alex's news conference yesterday, Brett Laurie, the team still sees him as a third baseman, although Alex was pretty clear that if he can find it, if making his team better offensively means adding a third baseman, then he said he will have that conversation with Brett Laurie, and he will talk to him about moving positions.
This is what I say. If you bring Mark Burley back, he's my third baseman. If you do not bring Mark Burley back, he's my second baseman.
Explain why.
Meaning that Mark Burley is, if you notice when Brett Laurie went on the DL and he stayed on the DL for a while, Mark Burley wasn't the same pitcher because that shortstop third base hole was being hit a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose Reyes, you can say what you want to say about him, he doesn't have that first step anymore. And when you don't have that guy that can fill that hole and make that great play and keep guys off the bases, it's tough. So that's my scenario. That's what I'm saying. If you bring Mark Burley's a put and play guy, meaning that he's not going to strike out a bunch of guys, and he's more of a put it in play. And you have to occasionally make that great play in the hole. And if you don't have the guy at third base, we see Juan Francisco. That was a big issue with the Blue Jays, and it cost him some games because mm-hmm. you can't make the play, and Jose Reyes is not making enough of them. And that's what I'm saying. If Mark Burley comes back, Brett Laurie's my third baseman. If they get rid of Mark Burley, you move him to second, and then you try to find a guy that can fill in at third.
Part of that equation, too, Kevin, is Jose Reyes. And I asked Alex Anthopoulos at his news conference yesterday about whether or not his team can improve its defense. and keep Jose Reyes at shortstop. And he being Alex Anthopoulos, has already talked about the fact that he and John Gibbons have had a discussion. They plan on talking to Jose Reyes and telling him, look, you are going to DH at times next year. You are going to sit, for example, the odd day game after a night game, or perhaps Sunday after Saturday on artificial turf. Mm-hmm. They're going to monitor his playing time a little more than they have right now. That makes perfect sense to me, provided you've got somebody who can replace his defense. My concern is that ultimately I think you need to have a discussion about moving positions. And, you know, I don't know where you move him. Third base, some have suggested. Mm. I don't see third base. Second base, the outfield, I'm thinking of the pounding that'll put in his legs. Jose Reyes is become an issue for this team, hasn't he?
It's tough just because of he can't make, and it gets back to the Ryan Goins thing. You can live with a guy playing shortstop that doesn't hit every day, but you can't live with a guy playing second base that doesn't hit. That's the big issue. And, you know, Reyes is what he is. He's a guy that's going to make the occasional great play, and he's a guy that's not going to make the routine play all the time. So it's a team that obviously is going to have some young guys in a rotation that the league has now seen and is going to make adjustments to and are going to put more balls in play, meaning they're going to hit the ball harder, meaning a shortstop's going to have to make that greater play more often than not. Can Jose Reyes do that? As of this year, he can't. So it's just, it gets to the point, I think, of a team going to a guy and really not asking, saying, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to make our team better. If we move you to second base, you don't have to make the great play all the time. You're going to stay on the field longer, because it gets back to how you're going to DH him. Because Edwin's probably going to be your DH.
Yeah.
You're not going to go to
Edwin. You $22 million a year. So.
It's not like I should go and I have to ask you whether you move positions. No, I'm paying you to play on my team. If I want you to play second base, you're playing second. It's a fine line. If, like I said, if Edwin's going to be your DH next year, to go to Edwin and say, guess what, Jose's going to DH once or twice a week, well, where are you going to play? Edwin's not going to like that. So it's, and it's the old saying is, you keep your superstars happy. Who's more of a superstar, Edwin Encarnacion or Jose Reyes? Yeah.
Jose Reyes this year, by the way, his batting average was .287. His OPS was .726. 30 steals. He had 46 extra base hits and 51 ribbies. And
he's a better offensive player than that.
He is a better offensive player than that. When we come back, Kevin Barker and myself are going to give out, you didn't even know I was going to do this.
No.
We're going to give out our individual awards.
Uh-oh.
Most valuable player, most valuable pitcher. This is a slam dunk. Rookie, surprise and disappointment. You up for that?
I got it.
All righty. It's Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central at Noon, brought to you by Home Hardware.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back with Baseball Central at Noon, brought to you by Home Hardware. It's Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. If you're listening and viewing pleasure, we'll be on all week. Get you through the first round of the playoffs, through the wild card round anyhow of the playoffs. And then we'll hand it off to Hockey Central at Noon next week, because it is hockey season, especially in Toronto, where the Blue Jays have finished the year out of the playoffs once again. So it's time to give out our individual awards for the Blue Jays. We're going to start with your surprise player, Kevin Barker. Who surprised you, player or pitcher? Who surprised you the most this season?
I'm going to go with Deonner Navarro. Just by early in the season, we really questioned the fingers he was putting down. I think every catcher is known for not so much, you know, as much as he hits, as much as how he relates to a pitching staff, meaning put the fingers down, not a lot of shaking off, and they throw the pitch because they're comfortable. I think he's worked his way into knowing every pitcher. I think at the beginning of the year we had issues with that just because coming from a new team, not knowing guys, having some young guys, having a lot of different guys out of a bullpen. And then I hear a veteran guy like Mark Burley praise that guy to no end, saying that I'll throw whatever finger he puts down.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, the biggest surprise. And on top of it, he was I think he had career highs in hitting. That just, it's very hard to catch as much as he did and also go out and perform with the bat, especially hitting cleanup. He hit cleanup a lot. That was a big surprise to me, and it was a real good surprise. It helped the Jays out a lot.
Yeah, my surprise is Drew Hutchison. If you told me at the start of the year that he was going to have the same number of starts as Mark Burley, the indestructible Mark Burley, and only have two fewer starts than R.A. Dickey, I would have said no chance in hell. Now, his ERA is 4.48, and I think Alex Anthopoulos is right. Alex thinks his ERA should, that's about a full run more than what he's capable of pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just can't say enough about Drew Hutchison. I know his whip is 1.26. That's better than Burley. That's just a shade worse than R.A. Dickey. It's better than Jay Happ. You know, Marcus Stroman's whip was 1.17, the best among all starters.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, for Drew Hutchison to be able to put that together, to be able to show the type of command he showed on most nights, he got 184 strikeouts and 60 walks, held opponents to a 2.45 average. That is way more than I expected from Drew Hutchison.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go on the record right now. I think Drew Hutchison next year has a shot to be the best starting pitcher in this rotation. I'll go out on the limb right now and say that.
That's
I think he's got a shot at being the best starting pitcher in this rotation next year. Well, that was our MVP, most valuable pitcher. For me, it's Drew Hutchison. Who would your most valuable pitcher be?
Well, I think R.A. Dickey.
Actually, let me... Okay, go ahead.
You want me to do that? Or?
No, hang on. No, because we're talking about... I was thinking of something else. We're talking about surprises. Let's talk about disappointments. The biggest disappointment. For me, it's got to be Colby Rasmus.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I was going to say, too. I mean, you could pick some guys in a bullpen, but it's hard to do that because they're not everyday players. Colby Rasmus, I expected a lot more from him. The biggest thing I expected from a big league hitter, a guy that's been around, a guy that's been in an organization like St. Louis, a guy that can do some things, I just think adjustments. I think I would have thought he would have made adjustments a lot quicker and would just have a little bit better approach on an everyday basis. And a guy that has five tools, you would think would be quicker on adjustments. And that's what baseball is all about. That's the reason why guys don't stay around a long time, is because they don't adjust quick enough. And, you know, you hope he has a better adjustment period the next team he's on. But it just was very confusing to me that a guy that has that much talent doesn't have it above the shoulders the way he should have it. It's, you know, it was disappointing to me, especially a guy that you would think could fill in a two spot with Cabrera going down, a guy that could just help your lineup to no end. It was very disappointing to me.
Has anybody pissed away a better chance at money?
Wow.
Than Colby Rasmus?
Well, you could see the dollar signs going by the day.
Playing in a hitter's ballpark, playing in the American League East, playing on a team that hits a ton of home runs, and he can't get off the bench. It's one of the worst walk year performances that I've seen from a guy who should be. Colby Rasmus should be going into the year, when you take a look at the outfielders in the market, he should be going into the year as one of the best outfielders in the market. He should be looking at 5 or 6 years and $15 to $17 million a year.
It's going to be tough. He's probably the one guy driving home or flying home right now wondering what's going to go on next year, because it's going to start soon. I mean, guys like that are on the bubble on getting paid a lot or not getting paid, or I mean, he's still going to make some money, but it's not going to be what you just said.
Another candidate for my disappointment was Anthony Gose. Again, I keep getting back to this. I love his game defensively, but my God, he's had so many chances. This team has been begging him for 2 years to win the center field job. I mean, they've been getting down on their hands and knees. They've been crawling across broken glass to try to get Anthony Gose to win the job, and he's He just hasn't done it.
You could say him and Colby are kind of the same kind of hitter.
They are indeed.
Just because make an adjustment. If I'm a good bunter, if I'm faster than everybody else, figure out some way. It's that old saying, you can't steal first base. And, man, you would just like to think, how do I make myself get on first base? Because once I get on first base, there's nobody can throw me out. And, I mean, that's a close call. But Colby Rasmus brings more to the game, I think, just because he can hit the ball in the seats. And he just brings so much more. And you would like to have seen him make the adjustment. If I'm not doing something right, figure out ways I can make it right. And he didn't do that all year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same old swing all the time.
Rookie of the year, I think we're probably both on the same page here. Marcus Stroman, 11-6, 130 innings pitched, 1.17 whip, 111 Ks, 28 walks. In 130 and two-thirds innings, and big stones.
But you can't say Aaron Sanchez is right there. You're talking about big stones. I mean, he's taken a sort of a tough situation coming from starting in the minor leagues to going to the bullpen and basically dominating, basically saying, give me the ball, I'm going to go out there and dominate. But Stroman's it. I mean, Stroman does it on every five-day basis. He does it against really good teams. He's doing it in the East. And it's something to build your team on, young guys. Not every organization has it. I'll give an example. The New York Yankees right now are searching for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not ever say, you'd think you would say that about the Yankees, but they're searching for something the Blue Jays already have.
You know, the other thing that Marcus Stroman did, and sometimes we overlook this. I mean, part of the deal with sports is it's the entertainment business.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus Stroman, well, they called it the Stro Show on Twitter. Marcus Stroman turned into a guy that people came out to see pitch.
Right.
Because it was a good show. You're you had a little guy in the mound. There's so much. I would never, ever, 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 ever compare anybody to Pedro Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
But there is so much about him that reminds me of Pedro Martinez, the sense of anticipation, the excitement. Just the idea that you've got this little guy out on the mound, this ball of energy who just wants to win.
Mm-hmm.
And you really got the sense when you're around the team and days he pitched, when you were in the ballpark and days he pitched, that it was a little different. There was a sense of expectation. And that's a good thing, because at the end of the day, part of this deal is entertainment.
He's the one guy, there's a superstar by his name.
Yes.
You can say that about really him and Aaron Sanchez, to me, superstars. Now, I've made it clear what I think where Aaron Sanchez should be, but they're both, to me, they can dominate both things of what they do as a starter and as a back end of a bullpen guy. And it's like you said, people want to come and watch him, and people want to come and watch Aaron Sanchez because he throws 99 with sink. Nobody else does that. It's impressive.
Who's your most valuable pitcher this year? This is an interesting one.
Well, I went with R.A. Dickey, and, you know, that may be a little surprising just because of, you know, Mark Burley and the guys and Drew Hutchison. You can sort of make an argument for everybody. You can make an argument for Brett Cecil just because he went from, you know, a little bit of a down year first half to establishing his breaking ball. But R.A. Dickey, to me, just because, you know, there's so many uncertainties about the knuckleball, whether it's going to break one day, whether it's going to move all over the place. And if he can throw it for a strike, it's been known that he can get a lot of guys out. And he made an adjustment between one thing, knowing if I throw this thing really hard, it's not going to break as much. It's going to be flat. I need to figure out ways to get guys out, change speeds, throw the fastball more every once in a while, flip a breaking ball just to let somebody see it, to set the knuckleball up and throw it for strikes. And, you know, you can say what you want to say. R.A. Dickey is the ace of the Blue Jays staff, and he kind of holds everything together. He's going to give you innings. He's going to give up a home run here and there, but for the most part, he's going to give you 6-7. He's going to give your team a chance to win, and he's my guy.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. His whip is 123. Opponent's average against is 233. That's the best of all the Blue Jays starters. And more to the point, 215 and two-thirds innings. And you know what? He was there in the second half. For the most part, he finished for the second year in a row, I might add, since he's been with Toronto. He's had a good finishing kick. And boy, when we talk about plans in the offseason, what may get done, what may not get done, back of my mind, I keep thinking 2 years in a row, this guy has finished strongly.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a team that's thinking it's got a shot at the playoffs next year, I could do worse than have a guy who 2 years in a row has shown in my ballpark, in my division, that he can finish with a bit of a finishing kick. I've really got to think twice about whether or not that's not the most, you know, a most valuable commodity.
Well, if he can keep the ball in the yard, he's a really good pitcher.
Yeah, and
so he can throw that thing for strikes because it's real hard to make adjustments with it because one day to the next, you don't know what it's going to do. So I just commend him for the adjustments he makes. Baseball, that's what it's about, is making the adjustments and who makes it faster than everybody else. And because sooner than later, good hitters are going to catch up to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he started throwing fastballs, a breaking ball, just to give them something else to look at. And, you know, Mark Burley went through it early in the season. It was Mark Burley, obviously. And then he went through that snod where he just couldn't get anybody out. And it's just tough. And to me, you know, R.A. Dickey made adjustments and kept his team in the game.
Most valuable player.
I mean, this is a no-brainer.
Jose Bautista?
Yeah, you know, you can't.
928 OPS, 286 average, 35 dingers, 103 RBI.
I mean, if the Jays would, I know you don't like to hear this, but if the Jays would have made the playoffs, he's in the talk for MVP. I mean, he's in the talk. He may still be in it.
Let me throw out another name to you. If we operate under the assumption that one of the definitions of most valuable player is the player most important to his team winning, I might put a vote for Melky Cabrera because when Melky Cabrera went on the lineup, they were done.
Yeah.
They, you know, losing Brett Laurie was not good. Somehow they managed.
Mm-hmm.
Losing Edwin for a while was not good. Losing Adam Lind for a while was not good. Losing Melky Cabrera was the absolute death knell.
Mm-hmm.
That was, to me, the end of the season. That lineup, suddenly Jose Bautista gets moved up. Now you've got exposure in the 7th, 8th, and 9th spot in that lineup. All of a sudden, you've got three positions that you can pitch to. It's hard to overlook Jose Bautista. You're absolutely right. If this team was a playoff team, Jose Bautista would be getting MVP consideration.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy whose absence was most noticed was Melky Cabrera.
It's a no-brainer. I mean, it's just everything he brings to the
it's
game.
It's a tough call. Yeah, no, it's a tough call because Batista's clearly their best player.
And also, you may, just with the pitching staff, Deonner Navarro, you could throw his name. I know he's probably a distant third between the two guys you just mentioned, but or a second. But he's right there just by the way he puts the fingers down, the quickness of the game, keeping the defense in the game, and he was hitting cleanup for a while.
So we are now that we've put a bow in the Blue Jays, it's playoff time. Baseball. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow the Oakland Athletics will send John Lester in the mound against James Shields for the Kansas City Royals, the AL wild card game. Wednesday, Madison Baumgartner's on the mound for the San Francisco Giants against Edison Volquez for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Playoff baseball. The wild card games, the first round, are usually the most exciting, the round that gives you the most meaningful baseball.
Crazy.
We'll be back tomorrow to get you set for the playoffs, get you set for those two wild card games, get you set for the rest of the playoffs as well. For Kevin Barker, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us today on Baseball Central at Noon, brought to you, as always, by Home Hardware. Take care, everybody.